Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, June 23rd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives. As we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered, these tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files or shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process, and listening to them repeatedly can serve as a tutorial for you on how to get the most benefit out of these tools. So, we hope people do that soon and often because of the tendency it has to improve people's quality of lives, also because it tends to promote or trigger comments, questions, answers, testimonials, etc. And if you have any of those to share with us, you can email us at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, or you can give us a call if you're on the show live, 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. And we'd like to remind people that you're free to do that at any point through the show. We'll either turn on your microphone right away and welcome you in, or we'll wait for a good time in terms of the pacing of the show, and we welcome your calls, comments, questions, answers, and testimonials, as almost always on this show. So what's on your mind today? What can we do to support you before we get back into the Way of Mastery Lesson 13 reading that we were doing? What is on your mind, and or how can we support you? 563-999-3581 and press 1. And quite a bit going on in terms of sessions and people needing to give themselves grace rather than beat themselves up emotionally and pick on themselves for not reaching some kind of an idealized outcome. And there's a lot of that going on. People are comparing themselves to some idealized standard and or the people around them. And as Guy Finley says, you know, they're measuring themselves and they're coming up short. What sense does that make? They're the one doing the measuring and they keep coming up short. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you pay attention to what's going on there. And so the invitation is stop measuring yourself and or, you know, give yourself some grace for all that you do and have accomplished and for what your true nature is that might be covered up by some garbage, by some negative experiences and judgments that have been programmed into you. But the truth of it is you are every bit as much a miracle of life as anybody who's ever lived and as anything you see in nature. And if you're able to see directly without all the filters and distortions your true nature, you will have that state of gratitude and bliss and compassion and for yourself and everyone around you, because you'll be seeing the truth of how you're connected to everyone and everything. And that's essentially what's happening here in the Way of Mastery. And we're in Lesson 13, and it's talking about understanding all of the different ways that we have created limiting definitions for ourselves and uncovering them. And that's the title of the section we're reading in now, is Bringing Awareness to the Limiting Definitions of Yourself. So the first step in this 13th lesson is to wake up to the fact that you are unlimited spirit. You are not just the body. And the next step is to bring your awareness to all of the limiting definitions that you've placed on yourself. So we're being invited to let go of any limiting definitions and face the fear, what will happen if I let go of those definitions? And the answer is nothing will happen, because in reality, those definitions have never truly limited your higher S self, your true self. Your higher S self, your true self, has gone on and on and on, creating, experiencing, expanding throughout all dimensions. So if you give up those limiting definitions, the only experience or change that could be said to occur is that this little tiny spark of your total self, higher self, consciousness, this little ray of light that belongs to the identification of you as a body in a certain time and place on the planet, will begin to open the doors of its awareness and access the awareness of its connection to your infinite consciousness. So we're being encouraged to walk on the planet as an awakened, enlightened master, and no one can do it for us. We have to make the choice. We're being told that it is far more delightful and grand to walk on the planet with that awakened knowledge. And yet, in the next moment, they remind us that it's perfectly okay for us to choose the limiting definitions. Perfectly okay for you to perceive yourself as a limited ray of consciousness. There will be certain consequences that follow but still you are completely free to continue in that field of experience for as long as you wish. And in other parts of this book, they let us know. You're free to do that, and that doesn't affect us at all. We will be here waiting patiently for the moment, the day and time when you choose to recognize your true nature and join in the direct experience of love. But in the meantime, if you want to play the game of being small and limited and a victim, that's your opportunity. That's your option. The text goes on and says, imagine one who goes to swim in the waters of a pool, and that pool has certain parameters. Each end may be 40 of your feet in length, and the sides may be 200 feet in length. The size doesn't really matter, the fact that there is a limit, because there's still a volume of water, and that is the field in which you swim. That field of water is like the field of your consciousness. It is shaped by the boundaries that you choose to draw. It's shaped by the limiting definitions that you choose to buy into about yourself. Now, that very same being could say, well, I'm much too grand to swim in a pool. I believe I'll put the little body on an airplane and fly to the grand ocean to swim in the midst, unbounded by a box. Of swimming is much different. Well, your consciousness is exactly like that. All that you experience from the moment you awaken in the morning until the moment you awaken in the morning, because there is no downtime, everything you see, everything you experience, is the direct result of where and how you have drawn lines on the blank canvas of consciousness. And you are free at any time to erase them and draw differently. So, it's recommended that we never say that we have discovered something. Rather, we should say, I'm experiencing the effects of certain lines that I've drawn in the infinite field of my being, and they are perfectly okay. That is like taking a walk in the rain. Learn to enjoy it from a place of unlimitedness within you, as a Christ would walk upon this earth and say, quote, I choose to feel the rain upon the skin of this body. I feel the shiver of the flesh against the cold. What a delight this is. I am unlimited forever. This moment does not define me. It does not imprison me. I am free. I am free. Tomorrow, I might move to some warmer climate where the sun shines and there are no clouds of rain. If so, I will enjoy the rays of sunlight upon the skin and the sweat upon the brow. And I will notice what it feels like as it trickles down across the skin. Not my skin, but the skin. And when I meet a friend, I will remind myself that our fields of mind are meeting in many dimensions. What will I choose to bring to that moment? I will see myself as limited to the boundaries, or will I see myself as limited to the boundaries of the skin of the body? Will I only tell them of my laments? Oh, my car had a flat tire. And then my mother called, and she's unhappy because I forgot her birthday. And, oh, my goodness, I just don't know how I'm going to get through this all. Or am I going to meet them as the unlimited cosmic being that I am? Will I create the space in which I get to enjoy beaming love to them? Will I enjoy seeing what is occurring just around the edges of the third dimensional experience? That, of course, still goes on. For example, oh, hi, Fred, nice to see you. But around the corners, I notice, oh, Fred, you just had an argument with your wife. Let me send you love around that. Without ever opening the physical mouth. Here's some love for you. You know the wisdom. You know the answer. Oh, I just noticed a little cancer is beginning to form in your colon. I think I'll send light to it. And then I say out loud, so how's the wife? How are the children? Oh, very good. And I continue beaming light into the cancer. The text asks, which experience do you prefer? The contracted awareness within two small squiggles on an infinite canvas of radiant light? Or the radiant light itself operating through very temporary and freely chosen squiggles called the body-mind? The way of transformation begins with you deciding what you are most committed to. It requires bringing awareness to every set of definitions you have adopted about the self and placed as an overlay upon it. It culminates in the transparency of the body-mind self, the little ray of light that you think you are, so that even while that continues for a little while, it is permeated by an awareness of your cosmic being. And that becomes your identity. You then are Christ, playing in the world, unlimited, unfettered, unvictimized by anything. What arises, arises, and what passes away, and arising and passing away are exactly the same to you. Love comes, it is received. Love seems to be taken, so what? You bless the being that withdraws awareness from you, and you simply open to whomever comes into your consciousness. For you decide how you will be in relationship in each moment. And you never discover something that is out there that is right. You simply create the structure of your experience. Whenever another one says to you, well, I like to eat meat. I love it raw and bloody upon my plate. And you have been eating nothing but fruits and vegetables. There is no reason to say anything at all. Just smile. Decide that you can beam love to them. Not because they're doing something wrong, and if you love them, they might change, but because their decision does not mean anything. It is just a description of how they are structuring their experience. If you identify yourself as a, quote, pure vegetarian, close quotes, you will not be able to prevent yourself from judging your brother or sister. And where judgment abides, you have ceased your awareness of your connection to all things, and you have created the experience of separation. And for a moment, you lose awareness of your connection to the presence of love. The question is, can you become selfish enough to learn to truly recognize that you are not influenced by anyone else's choices, and their choices do not say anything about your own? You are free to embrace your experience of being wholly, completely self-created, that your experience is being wholly and completely self-created out of perfect innocence and perfect playfulness. You have the free use of time to generate your experience. Now, the next section recommends creating a transformation journal. And this transformation journal might be a place where you start writing down all of these limiting definitions you have for yourself, all of the awakened nuances that come to you as you look at this more and more closely and realize that you're free to experience yourself as an infinite creator and an infinite consciousness. And you're free to experience yourself as limited and small and weak and a victim. So the next section is titled Creating a Transformation Journal. And the text reads, much has been given to you in this lesson. We would highly suggest for those committed to transformation that they go back and be very clear about what is being shared. You might choose to begin to create your own personal transformation journal. You might choose to let it be used for no other purpose. You might want to take the journal and find a picture that represents for you the highest, the deepest, the most passionate, the most beautiful expression of love that you can imagine. We recommend that you don't compare it to anybody else's. We recommend that you then put it on the front of your journal and buy a pen that will be used for no other purpose than this journal, and then find a place that this journal is going to sit so that nothing else occupies that space, whether it's on an altar or in a drawer by your bed. Find a place deliberately out of the field of your Christedness and say, ah, yes, this is the place. This feels right. Then, each time you begin a lesson, go through it carefully and write down the key points that are being shared. Decide what they will mean for you and decide what steps you will take to incorporate them into your lived daily experience. Even if that means that you're not going to be doing the lesson or the exercise and they won't be incorporated at all, simply take 100% responsibility for the decision and write it down in your journal. For example, you might write, quote, I don't think I'm going to do that. I own it. I decide freely, and that is the way it is, close quotes. As you do this, by the time these lessons end, you will be surprised about what you have written down in your journal. As you go through it, lesson by lesson, you may also want to keep track of some of the things that you experience as you play with the practices that we give you. How are things changing? What experiences are you beginning to have as you explore the space just beyond the corners of your normal awareness? When you do the exercise we suggested at the beginning of this lesson, what changes? What images come? What thoughts did you notice? What colors did you see, if any? Write them down, jot them down, play with it, have fun with it. For indeed, in each lesson, we will be giving you very specific, though what may seem as very simple, exercises. They are designed to give you access to what is already occurring at all times in a way that can foster and deepen your deliberate awareness of what is occurring all the time in your cosmic and unlimited self. The only transformation you can experience in space and time is the reaching down from the depth of the ocean into one tiny temporary wave and readjusting the little foam drops on the tip of the wave that you call the mind-body of the self, so that it begins to be a transparent conduit for an awareness of the ocean itself. This is the game of awakening. It is actually the most delightful use of time you will ever find. So again, here's the concept of us being a conduit for the creative energy. And that's always the case. It's always on. And we're going to be creating with that creative energy, whether we like it or not, creating more of whatever we put our attention to. Guy Finley likes to talk about how the way the world is set up, automatically learn about whatever we focus our attention on. He says, whatever we focus our attention on teaches us about itself. So if we focus our attention on the concept of being a conduit for the creative energy, that process itself will start to teach us about what that means, what it's like, what it takes for us to be even more aware of it. But the idea is for us to become a transparent conduit for the energy of life, energy of love, energy of creation, the mind energy of the Creator. And it's something that no amount of words even comes close to describing. And for those that have had the experience and they try to explain it to somebody else, it often seems that they're fumbling over themselves or their words. It often seems incomprehensible because we're talking about an experience that goes beyond words. The text goes on and says, as you choose to do that, to become that transparent conduit for an awareness of creation extending through you, as you choose to do that, it will carry you beyond this world. Not from denial, that you're denying the world that you're in, but simply because you've outgrown it. You will have allowed it, experienced it, accepted it, studied it, and then put it down like a child puts down a toy they had in first grade when they move on into fifth grade. The text says, there are dimensions of experience awaiting you that are so much grander than the dimension of the body-mind. But the way that you get to them is by bringing full awareness to what you are choosing to experience in each and every moment. You can't get there by being in denial, by suppressing and denying and avoiding and running away from and projecting blame on others. You only get there by bringing full awareness to what you are choosing to experience in each and every moment. For example, experiencing the soap on the skin in the morning shower. Wow, how amazing. Or experiencing a raindrop on your cheek and the shiver against the cold, the sound of a cat meowing or the thoughts of a dog across the street. These things you call to yourself in this dimension. Don't you want to taste it all? Don't you want to wrap yourself around it all? Don't you want to remember that magic is around you, and out of that magic, the moment you are experiencing is being created from within your holy self? It has never been, and it will never be. Again, you're creating your experience of life moment to moment, and it is a mystery of all mysteries. It is the dance of creation. It is the reality of love. There is no higher state in the mind-body than to live as one who has been blown away and lives in that state perpetually. Then you are free and the world has no hold upon you. This lesson's message is a beginning for anyone who chooses to wrap his or her unlimited hands around it. But alas, we cannot shape the use of it for you. And if you do not like where you are, look no further than yourself. We await you. We will reach out for you in a million different ways across space and time, into the space between your thoughts, not just through the mechanism of this course, but every time there's a little space open in your consciousness, we will indeed come and whisper. We might whisper something like this: beloved friend, come and play at a vaster level. It is all within you. Come and play. Come and play with the Creator's offspring. You are free in this moment. You are as free as you will ever be right now. So how then will you use your time? What will you construct out of your infinite field of awareness? What world would you look upon? What thoughts will you think? What feelings will you evoke within the cells? Where will you direct the body to be placed on a daily basis? How will you observe, or how will you enter into a relationship with each moment, whether touching a dial or touching a body? It really makes no difference. What will you bring to that experience? Is it Christ touching the shoulder of another, or is it just some limited, needy self? Who will you say that you are to this world? For what you decree is instantly. There is no way out of this responsibility. We suggest that you stop fighting it and birth Christ, where once you thought something less than that was in existence or dwelt there. Beloved friends, peace be unto you always, and always we are with you. We come to you not alone, but with many who have delighted in creating a resonance with you, with me, with others, for no other reason than that power expands exponentially when minds join in love from a foundation of wholeness and not neediness. I do not need the one that you call my mother. She does not need me. But boy, how we delight in creating together that which will extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful. And it extends forever. Will you come and play with us? It's your choice. Peace be with you always and always. Amen. So that is the second read-through of the 13th lesson. First lesson of Way of Transformation. 13th lesson of the Way of Mastery as a book. And we have some time for comments or questions. We probably have about 25 minutes. What's happening? How is this landing for you? What's it stirring up in terms of thoughts and processes? Does it feel like you're being told you're doing it wrong and it's all your fault? I have a number of people that come to this work and they feel like they're being told that they're doing it wrong and they're to blame, and they miss the parts where it says every time you reach a negative conclusion, it's because there's an error in your perception, there's an error in your thought process, because all there is the energy of creation. All there is the mind of the Creator. And if you are willing to experience that, it takes you beyond words in a heartbeat. And if you are trying to live in denial of that, you suffer. And as this book says, in some ways, you slumber in your suffering. So if you reach a point where you're hearing these words and your mind is telling you, oh, they're telling me I'm screwing up and I'm a failure and I'm only suffering because it's all my fault, then that's part of the intellectual conditioning that this particular spiritual teaching tells us is in error. It is not true that we are bad or wrong or to blame. It's just an energy field interacting with energy fields, interacting with energy fields, interacting with energy fields. And it is only wrong when somebody labels it wrong. It's only right when somebody labels it right. Otherwise, it's just a flow of energy. And if we've been taught that it's something other than just a flow of energy, and we've been taught that we're right and somebody else is wrong, or vice versa, what we're not being taught in that moment is how that choice of thought patterns is the only thing that creates our experience in life. And so that's what teachings like this are designed to help us do, to wake up to a different way to approach, question, experience our lives. Our lives, our interactions with others, our judgments of ourselves, etc. And it's highly recommended that we do that soon and often, because by trying it differently, that's the only way we can have a different experience. If we keep doing the same thing we've always done, we're going to get more results like the results we've always gotten. There's a bottom line observation that says, if I have a negative thought about myself or someone else, or a negative emotion active in my mind, I can instantly know three things. The first thing is, number one, it's either an out-and-out lie or it's based in a falsehood. Number two, it's not about what's going on in the moment. This is an old tape playing. This is an old energy resonating. This is a pattern of false evidence that's appearing to be real. It might be tied to what Dr. Michael Rice calls the power person dynamic. It might be tied to some negative thought patterns that I downloaded when I was in my single-digit years of life. It might be something that's active in my mind because I downloaded it 2 years ago on a job site where there was a lot of abuse going on. When I have a negative thought active in my mind about myself or someone else or something else, and or I've got a negative emotion active in my experience, I can instantly know these three things. It's a liar based on a falsehood. It's not about what's happening in this moment. It's an old tape playing. And third, if I choose to keep pouring my mind energy into that thought pattern, or say or do something from that negative emotional state or negative thought, I'm only going to make my situation worse. I cannot improve my life situation by this pattern just continuing where I act, think, or speak from a negative emotional state or a negative thought. That's me pouring a toxic, a wounded, a negative energy into my life, and it can't lead to healing and integration. It can't lead to joy and gratitude. So I get to choose. Once I've been made aware of this, I get to choose. What will I choose? It's up to me. What would I prefer? That's what we're being asked to think about on a regular basis in this work. What would you prefer? Not, oh, this is all bad and this is all wrong and this is all damning me to hell because I've made these bad decisions and choices. This work is saying it doesn't really work that way. It works this way. You're choosing from the depth of your soul to be where you are and to experience it the way you're experiencing it. You're choosing how much you're engaging your intellectual process versus asking to be shown and tapping into the awakened heart or your unconscious or your higher self. You're choosing it all the time. And what this work is asking us to do is recognize that we're choosing that and just be honest with ourselves about whether or not we prefer the results we're getting or we prefer to try something else. And then take the time and try something else. Choose again, as Diedrich Wolzak would say. Uncover the limiting definitions that we are using about ourselves that are creating an experience of us as being small or wounded or limited or victim. And once we see the pattern of thought and how our decision to buy into it and believe it is actually creating our experience of life, new options open up for us. And that's what all this work is about. Recognizing that every day you're in the perfect teaching school for you. Your very life, the dirty dishes, the laundry, the dog that needs to go out, the bills that need to be paid and there's not enough money in the bank account for them, all of that is the very best school of life for you to be in. The perfect school. Welcome, Susan.
Hello, Dr. Tim. So, everything you've been reading makes sense. And I feel as if it brings me to a place where I can just observe. And I'm in a really tough situation with a grandson, so this is great stuff to keep hearing. But I cannot seem to let go of a goal of having him be okay. I can be calm, relatively calm, and keep a loving space when he is. You mentioned power person right when I was thinking of my question, and it appears to be a power person thing that he slips into where he becomes just beyond ugly belligerent toward the people who are loving him the best and supporting him the most and paying his way. And he slips into this arrogant, entitled, angry mode where if I say something like I cannot reward you with payments for food, for instance, and you have a savings account, I can't do that because it appears that I am rewarding you for being rude. I want to make a deal with you, and here's the goal right here. I want to make a deal with you. Even if you have to put on an act, I want you to be always respectful. You can challenge us, but be respectful. And he says, why should I be respectful when you're not respecting me? I mean, I don't get anywhere, and I realize, okay, I've already got a goal. I'm already feeling triggered. I'm already feeling tense. And the best I can do in situations where it gets really bad, I say, Mr. Boone, I can't talk to you right now. We're not getting anywhere. Let's talk later. And he'll hang up usually before I do. It's a really tense situation. And right today, it seems to be good because we sent him some money. My daughter is upset with us because we sent him money in spite of bad behavior. My husband says, we're buying time, that's all. We haven't found a way to get through, and we don't want him to leave the program and be out on the street. And Michael has suggested that we get comfortable, not comfortable, but we allow the idea that he might take his own life in rage and so forth. Like that. So everything you're saying makes sense, but I'm bumping up against, okay, what do I do next? What is the next can do in this particular messiness? Take a breath. Okay. And Dr. Tim, before you say anything, how are you? You've been through a lot, and it sounded in the last few days as if you had a cold or something. Have you got a bug?
No, I think it's just allergies.
Oh,
comes and goes throughout the day.
Yeah.
No lasting, no fever, no other symptoms, just a little.
Good. And your sense of smell and taste is there and all that. Okay, good.
Yep. Yep, COVID tests are negative and all that good stuff, so.
Good. Good. Well, it's nice to have you back, but I think if, you know, you went through that weekend without loading us up with a whole lot of details on what you're going through, and maybe that's anything you want to do. I mean, what you told about it was wonderful, but it's a big change.
Well, what is it that you're thinking you don't know?
Oh, that's a great question. That's a great question. I think I don't know how you really feel, and it's none of my business, so I don't ask directly. But anyway, if
how I really feel about what?
About this whole last weekend you went through, the death of your mother. And...
Well, I've tried to be rather direct and forthcoming about that. It's been a huge relief. I've been doing the grieving process for years, since the vibrant, healthy, funny, loving woman who was my mother has been fading for several years. And
yeah.
since this transition that the Way of Mastery says we mistakenly call death is going to happen for all of us, I would hope that I'm surrounded by as many loving people when that time comes for me, and or I can recognize the truth of the loving people around me, even if they aren't. It would be as peaceful and supported as my mother's transition was.
Mm.
And so I feel relieved that she's no longer suffering. I feel like I've done a really active job of grieving the losses of her youth and vitality. And we had a 90th birthday party for her 4 years ago, where we had all kinds of people send their cards and memories, and we made a scrapbook for her. And I wrote a piece for that. I probably wrote a piece for her 80th. And so we've been in the process of recognizing and celebrating her life for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I'm in the space now of just feeling very grateful that she's no longer suffering, and that it was pretty much Hallmark movie-type wonderful transition.
Great. I'm glad. That's good.
Now, having said that, does that leave gaps in what you think you would like to know?
No, not at all. I do.
You know, there's a little bit. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You have this what?
I just have this feeling that I shouldn't have asked. I did the wrong thing. Okay. Probably part of my garbage. And
were you listening to the earlier part of the show where we're talking about letting go of those judgments?
I was listening, yes, and there they are. all my old friends.
Well, the idea that I was going to say is that there's more work to do now, and there will be for a while in terms of, you know, getting my sister settled in a new place and managing the estate. I'm supposed to be the executor of her estate, et cetera. And, well, it's not that big an estate, so it's not that big a job, but it is. There's a learning curve, and there are extra calls and emails to make, and I still have, you know, thank you cards to write for people who showed up for the funeral, et cetera. But in terms of my mental state and or grieving, the grieving's been happening for years, and it's more a celebration and a relief at this point than grief. And you know, the sense of accomplishment. You know, we were actively present for her for a good long while over the last 6 years, and we gave her, I've said to people in different notes that she was able to receive ultra premium care because she was living with my sister. She didn't have to go to a nursing home, and we came close a few times, but we were able to avoid that, and we were just fortunate.
So great.
And she was
fortunate. You know, it's funny hearing you talk about that, because my mother's death was similar. It was the ideal, gentle, loving, all her people who could be there were there. People at a distance were there, either on the phone. And when she died, I actually felt real joy. And yet my sister, my younger sister, was with me, who hadn't with her but was nearby most of the time, was crying and saying, "How can you be so happy?" And it was a weird scene. Because I'm sort of, you know, just saying, "Yay, she did it," you know, and it was so good. And my sister saying, "How can you do that? She just died." And my mother was 94, and things were falling apart, and her mind wasn't quite all together. She was very funny toward the end. She would make mistakes in speaking that were very funny, and she would laugh first. She'd say, "Listen to what I just said." So she had a lot of brain cells, but there was a little slippage here and there, which ended up being just funny, funny remarks. But it was good, and she didn't have to go into a nursing home. All the way through the end, she was with her family. And it was, I guess I've always felt a little guilty that I didn't feel badly, and I didn't really ever grieve either. I just felt as if I'd done my best, and we had a wonderful time, and it's the right thing to have happened, and the best thing that could have happened, and I don't know. I guess I expected some cataclysmic wave of grief at some point, but I never got it.
Yeah, it isn't mandated. You know what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross guessed at in her book was just a guess, and it wasn't based on research. It wasn't based on any kind of evidence or proof, and she wrote about it and said, you know, it's kind of silly that people are taking this as a gospel truth when it was just intended as a framework to start thinking about the grief and loss process. And people don't go through these stages lockstep like robots. It's all over the map. Some people go through every stage. Some people don't go through any of them. And there's everything in between. We do know pretty solidly, then we can observe that when we run from painful, sad thoughts, loss, grief, etc., we tend to block out both the good memories and the bad ones. So we can numb ourselves out to that pain, fear, or sadness, and yet it has consequences. And it is highly preferable for me to do the work to remember the thoughts, the feelings, the memories, the judgments, the good times, the bad times, etc. Cry the tears of sadness and loss if they're there, and the pain of the loneliness that some will have. It's to prove to myself that that won't kill me or shut me down or send me into an insane segment of life experience. And once I do that enough, actively enough, and catalog the memories, then I'm in much more direct connection, contact, awareness of my life with that person and their memories and how my relationship with them goes on even though they're no longer in the body. And now I've got access to all those memories, good, bad, and other ways, for ready display in the library of my mind. And I feel more connected to them than if I don't do a process like that. And I've been doing a process like that with my mother for a lot of years, as I mentioned, because it's been my observation that everybody who lives eventually dies. And it's also an observation of mine that it is really absurd that we take this one thing that's absolutely guaranteed once a person has been born into a physical body, that they will eventually drop that body. We take that one thing that's absolutely universal for humans and we turn it into this horrible fear experience and try to avoid it at all costs. And turn away from it so that people have to go through it alone rather than with love and support, which is one of the things I really appreciate so much about hospice, is that any good hospice team, and there are some that are not so good out there, but any good hospice team is going to be connecting with people personally, and they're going to be bringing a level of expertise and wisdom about how to navigate that process in the most respectful way possible. And they'll be personally connected to the individual and their family members, and it turns into a massive blessing. So, you've done it again. Thank you for the call here in the last 15 or 20 minutes and helped us reached the end of our first hour. So please drop any labels you have about how you were wrong to ask those questions and accept my gratitude for your question and your call. And I will mute you so you can listen into the second hour. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you. Thanks for starting the replay for us yesterday.
Oh, you're very welcome and deserving, and welcome back. Have a great show.
Thank you. Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio, and today is Thursday, June the 23rd, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to get dialed in, and I'll invite you to go to the website. Susan, thank you for catching that one glitch yesterday. Anytime anybody sees anything on the website that's not working, a link that doesn't go anywhere or whatever, please drop me a line and let me know. The website's so large that, you know, one little glitch, I can overlook it a lot. And so let me know if you find something, and I will do my best to correct it. So I appreciate you letting me know about that. Our website is white again, whyagain.org, And there's just lots of information out there. And so we invite you to go out there and just meander around, click on things, you know, and just let us know what you think. And today is going to be a super busy day because right after the radio show, you know, we go till 2 o'clock, and then at 2:05, Michael has an interview with Tim Kellis and the Marriage Group, 30, the Global Book Club. So one thing right after the other here today. It's going to be a full energetic day for him. So welcome, Michael.
Especially after this morning, a neighbor contacted me who had collected some leaves and had time and wanted to help me get them together so that we could put them in our compost pile. So I went out this morning and chopped up with a vacuum chopper about 300 pounds of leaves and hauled them across the road. So it's been a good workout. Send energy, if you would, to my muscles that are, you know, talking to me more than they usually do. And, yeah, we're going to have a fun day today. We've got lots on the schedule. So, and we're delighted to be sharing the space with you to bring these principles forward on as many levels, as many aspects of forgiveness as we can possibly do. So delighted that you're here. And just to check with you, sweetie, is there anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in the chat room before I start on a topic?
No, it's all quiet.
Okay. Well, I want to take a little different perspective on the power person dynamic that we've talked about so much over the years. And this comes out of our codependence to interdependence work. And just start off by laying out that power person dynamic. So if you happen to be new to the show, that will make it, what I'm going to share will make sense for you. And then take a look at some just ideas about what it means, what we can do about it. So the power person dynamic is something we identify in the work we do on codependence to interdependence. And we define a power person by three factors. We offer that in that workshop that a power person dynamic is instilled in someone's mind when these three things happen. And the someone is usually a child in relationship with a parent, although not always. I've worked with elderly people who experienced a situation where they bought in and had a power person dynamic kind of accidentally slip past them into their minds and realized it was running their lives. So the three things that happen, how we define a power person. One, power person is someone who had more power over your life at some point than you did. It may have just been one moment, but if they had the power and you didn't, that would be one factor. Now, that alone doesn't mean a whole lot. But second thing is, if they're not functioning, if that person who has that power is not functioning as a human being, that is not functioning as conscious, active, present love. And then the third factor is that being the object of that circumstance or situation, it is perceived, the situation is perceived as survival. So when those three things happen, my offering is that, you know, when you recognize that we are not physical beings, but that we are energetic beings, our energy fields open. And in that open space, again, it's usually a child. The child becomes like a sponge energetically and literally just sucks in every energy of the environment, every physical energy, every mental, every emotional, every voice tone, every energy in the environment is just taken in and installed within the mind, within the energy field. Now, once that's installed in the mind, my offering is that the rest of one's life will be limited to one of three behaviors. And which behavior is active and driving perception, which guides our behavior, is determined by the level of stress that we're under. So once a power person dynamic is instilled in a mind, when there is no stress, that person will do whatever they did to get along with their power person. So in the future, 10, 20, 30 years from now, there's no little or no stress going on. And, you know, so let's imagine this person is Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy with their power person. No stress. So if they're running through life and there's little or no stress, maybe they're, you know, they're the life of the party, they're the fun person, they're Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy. And then stress begins to build. And I just invite you to look at your own life and see if and how this applies to you. Once that stress starts to build, that person will shift out of being Mr. or Ms. Nice Guy. And they'll do, the mind, the automatic decision system of the mind will prompt them to do whatever it is that they did to resist and survive with their power person. So that'd be level two when stress starts to build. And then when they become ultra stressed, and this could be, you know, something happened to a child of five, and it's maybe this person's now, you know, 50 years later, 45 years later, and this power person dynamic is still running them. And so the third level of behavior is when one becomes ultra stressed. They will do what their power person did to them that they hated the most. And my offering is that's what runs the world. And it's since it's what runs the world keeps replicating the same dynamics over and over and over again. You heard it said that those who refuse to study history are condemned to repeat it. And so this power person dynamic taking over in the mind, literally, you know, in that moment of thinking this was survival, this situation is survival, and here's the person with the power, and love is not their state of mind. The energy absorbed, by definition, is energy that is of a disintegrative nature relative to the true nature of that child. You know, we've asked everybody over and over again, go back to the moment where you held a newborn child, tap into the essence of the newborn, and virtually everyone says the essence of the newborn is love. Then we ask people to tap out in, just check in, is the newborn loving you? No, the newborn is not loving you. The newborn is love. So we're offering, that's a way to define who we are as human beings. And we recognize that that is our nature, becomes installed in the mind, and is controlled by the levels of stress that one is under, then it becomes difficult to break through and present one's true nature. And the energy of that power person dynamic is quite literally a disease. And we're talking about a disease on every level, on the physical, mental, and emotional level. So it would seem to behoove oneself to make an agreement with one's environment, that is, everybody in the environment. Gee, if you see me expressing my power person dynamic, would you let me know? Because here's what happens. I mean, you know, I've been doing this work for 50 years. I've looked and searched everywhere, and I've never heard anything that even resembles the power person dynamic in this kind of detail. As far as I know, until this work came along, it has been an unknown. I mean, you can go back to the scriptures, and the scriptures say, look to the lives of the fathers, and ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. And that's pretty powerful to recognize that. But that doesn't define how this powered person dynamic is put in, what it takes to put it in, and what it means when it's there, aside from, well, it's going to run your life. Look to the lives of the fathers, for ours is but a shadow. And there is generally a generational component to this power person dynamic. But relative to this integrated energy system that we call a body-mind unit, remember we've talked about Albert Einstein, you know, the starting point of the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. And Einstein says, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so low as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. So Einstein's telling us, a world of material substance does not exist. We live in a world of energy. Yes, the mind makes it look like matter. We make pictures and make things look solid, but there's nothing solid about any of it. We know scientifically if we could alter the rate of vibration in which our brain sees the world, we would see this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light energy. We wouldn't see a world of bodies. So relative to one's own integrated energy system, there are two qualities of energy. What builds it up? What tears it down? Where tear down energy is stored in the structure, that by definition is a disease. And break that word down, dis-ease. The child who thinks this is survival with the raging parent or the sulking parent or the screaming parent or the traumatized parent or the depressed parent, that the child whose field opens and just takes all that energy in the future, is going to have their lives run by that energy. And without the brain cells to know what's happening, they'll go, well, you know, I guess that's just the way I am, you know. I get under stress, and what I do is I rage and scream at people, and I lash out at them. That's just the way I am. Nothing I can do about it, man. It's just, you know, it just comes up, and I have no control. Well, go back and take a look. How did it feel when your power person lashed out and raged and screamed at you? It was hell. And you can have choice over that if you have the brain cells to understand how it was instilled, how it was installed, and how to clean it up. So what this work is about is giving people the tools with which to clean up that dynamic, which for most of us has been going on for many generations. And so these energetic dynamics that are absorbed in those moments of power person interaction are dis-ease energy that contain every energy absorbed from the power person from one experience with them or perhaps 1,000 experiences, 1,000 interactions. And again, in many cases, the interaction between this generation of power person and this child simply replicates because the person in the intervening generation had no idea what was running them. They just knew that under stress, they did what their power person did to them. And my offering would be what happens in that when we go into a state of unconsciousness, in that state of unconsciousness, whatever's there just tends to take over and run the system. And what we're saying is there is no need for any behavior to run the system. If you realize who you are as a human being, if you realize that you are love, it would seem to make sense that the only energies inside or outside of yourself that you respond to are those energies based in active present love. That would seem to make sense. And so to address the power person dynamic, to be if it's playing out unconsciously, to become aware of it, because becoming aware of it means you're becoming aware of a dis-ease energy that's running your structure and perhaps has been running your family system for many generations. And in that moment of high stress, the child who perhaps has become the adult in high stress and doesn't know what to do, high stress means I've got to do something to change or to achieve something in my environment. And so in that case, the I've got to do something to change or achieve something in my environment, and I don't know what to do, what do? I look into my, I unconsciously look into my unconscious and look for, well, who was God and what did God do to win? Well, in that unconscious state, God is going to be the power person. Power person won. I mean, it was hellish. It was horrendous. The power person won. But if you do hellish and horrendous to somebody else, and it doesn't matter what the hellish and horrendous is. It might be just something as simple as criticizing. It might be something as extreme as raging. It might be something as ultra extreme as physical, emotional, and mental abuse. But what happens is, in that state of unconsciousness, one looks back into the unconscious. And I'm not suggesting this is a conscious process. I'm not suggesting it's something people are aware of, but we can start to become aware of it and start to clean it up. So when I become aware of it, instead of just looking into the unconscious and, you know, in essence asking the question, well, what did God, my power person, again, usually a parent, do in order to win when it was a high-stress situation with me? The automatic decision system will pull that the behavior out of the unconscious, and bang, that's what's going to run the show. And that means that the dis-ease energy of the generations is simply going to replicate itself one more time. Because that's all this carbon-based memory system can do, is replicate whatever's in it. But when we wake up to who we are and we know how to open the veil of the temple, which is what forgiveness does, we can access those dynamics. And with a little support from our friends, when we're in that power person dynamic and we're unaware of it, we're unaware that we're trapped in a dis-ease condition, and the dis-ease condition spews out of our mouths at someone else, which means, now they may not be home for delivery. They may just, you know, pass on it. But what it does mean is, if it spews out of my mouth, it went through my tissue structure first, and I'm the one who's going to get to suffer from it. You know, there's an interesting line in the Course in Miracles that says, you don't really recognize what you're doing to yourself. You're not even afraid of your own fear. Person who does a behavior that's based in a dis-ease energy is replicating that dis-ease energy throughout their physiology before they ever pass it on to someone else. Desirable to understand and to see. Now, if your power person got caught at what they were doing and went into a rage, then probably if somebody points out your power person dynamic to you, you'll go into a rage at them. It'll, you know, again, it's the replicant mind. But to start to work through those dynamics, to start to let loose of the discomfort, the thought disorders that create pain, physical, mental, emotional, depression, you know, anxiety, to take charge of those thought disorders. And then, you know, this tool, we have a whole series of tools, but the main tool in that situation would be to begin to use the forgiveness process, a la first century Aramaic forgiveness, not a la Greek, I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening in me. So recognizing that if I'm playing out a power person dynamic and I step into a worksheet, I literally begin to apply first century Aramaic forgiveness, and I look at what it is that's creating my ultra-stressed condition. You know, look all over the world. I have looked. You won't find anybody. Go talk to the stress experts. I haven't found one that can tell me. You'll find it in this work, but you won't find it anywhere else. At least if you do find it somewhere else, please let me know. How are these ultra-stress conditions created? How do we create stress? Well, you notice that you never play out a power person dynamic with someone unless they're violating a goal that you hold for them. And that goal is the key to the forgiveness process, and it's also the key to the power person dynamic. Because every time you set a goal, you create a stress. One of the key gifts of engaging in the reality management worksheet process, the forgiveness process from the Aramaic, is you keep your stress down because you're removing stressors. You know, people talk about how, oh, that was a stressful situation. There's no such thing as a stressful situation. It doesn't exist. What makes the situation stressful is I have goals for this situation, and my goal isn't being fulfilled. It isn't being carried forward. There's where the stress comes from. So I'm always in charge of the level of stress I'm under. And if I engage in the forgiveness process on a regular basis, you know, it's one of the reasons why when you do that, why is this happening to me again workshop, which, by the way, there's a brand new version of it, up until last week or 2 weeks ago, if somebody wanted a copy of that workshop, it was available to buy on a CD or a DVD or a streaming service. And for the first time, we just did a new 3-hour, 2 hours and 54 minutes, I think it is, the exact, why is this happening to me again workshop. Go to the events page on our website. It's there free. And you'll see that the goal is intimately connected with the forgiveness process, because goals are what create stress. And when we go from, you know, low stress to stress starts to build to ultra stress, it is not because of the circumstances that are happening in our world. It's because of the goals that we hold in our minds. And I always have charge of the goals that are active in driving my perception, driving my behavior. And as I start to literally eradicate the underlying patterns through forgiveness, eradicate the underlying patterns of the power person, I can delete that totally and completely from my bloodline. What a gift to give whoever started that behavior off, and maybe it was dad or mom, or maybe it was great, 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 great dad or mom. Whoever it was, if I do the work, it opens the energy field for them and everybody between them and me in the bloodline. Space for everybody going forward to be freed of that dynamic. Stress is caused when you set a goal. Stress is not caused by situations. If you become ultra stressed and you start doing behaviors that are made up of dis-ease energies and create dis-eases in your physiology, you've got a serious problem. And my offering is this power person dynamic is literally, I mean, look at the insanity going on in our world. It's literally the dynamic that runs the world. It runs the business world. It runs the world of government. It runs the world of finance. It runs the world of religion. Because every individual who is not aware that there was a power person dynamic installed in their minds when they were perhaps in utero, or perhaps a year or two or three or four or five or 10 or 15, if they're not aware that it's there, they can't change it. And if it's never changed under ultra stress, and just notice, I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've heard say, swear, I'm never going to do that again. And they don't ever do it again until the next time they're ultra stressed, and then they do it again. Because they don't know how to go into their own minds and remove that content, how to forgive. Remembering that forgiveness has nothing to do with, I let you off the hook for everything inside of me. Forgiveness is a tool with which I go inside of me and remove my hostility, my fear, my rage, my guilt, my grief, my pain, my trauma. And I make space for functioning as a human being. Space for functioning as conscious, active, present love. So that's what we're here to facilitate in the world. Honored and delighted that you're part of the conversation. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, we don't. It is very quiet. We have 34 minutes, so somebody press one. We've got plenty of time for conversation.
So if you're out there in listener land and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, that means you are not listening on your telephone. And if you have a question for us or a thought, if you dial into the show directly, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you dial in on that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push one, through the magic of technology, a hand will go up on the control panel. Jeannie's running, sitting in front of her on her computer. awesome technology. And she'll know that you want to speak to us, and we'll be having a conversation. So if you're out there in listener land, push one. Let's talk about it. Is there something about this power person dynamic that you need to, if you need to know more about, you'd like to understand deeper? How does it fit with forgiveness? How can we support you? How can we refine the understanding?
And I did
put
a link to a page that we have on the website about the power person dynamics. So that's in the notes for the day.
Sweet. Awesome. Cool. So if Jeannie and I were on the road when we were in your hometown, and I just spent, 22 or 23 minutes talking about this power person dynamic, I was on a platform in your local library or church or university or prison or, town hall, whatever, and I walked down off the stage, finished doing this presentation about the power person, and you were in the audience, what would you come over and ask me? I know that for most people, this dynamic, I mean, there's some people who have been around the work for a long time, so they really comprehend it, but for most people, this is kind of a shocking new piece of information. And so if you were there and I walked down off the stage and, I was just hanging around having a cup of tea, you walked over, what would you be saying? Well, Michael, I just have one quick question. And the whole objective of this show is for you to ask your question so that you can lead us to the next space that we're going to be covering with these tools, with this radio show. So we would love your interaction. We would love your input. And the way you do that is push one, and let's talk about it. How can we support you? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581.
I'll just add that the power person is not always like mean and forceful. And, a lot of times we think, okay, my power person has to be, my mom, because she was the one that always, whipped us and yelled at us and all of this. But, it was actually during one of the teachers' intensives that we did, and we were doing the long form. And what I didn't like that form the first couple of times I did it. And then it was like this big aha that my power person was actually my dad. And dad, I mean, you can ask anybody. Dad is one of the gentlest, kindest, sweetest men that I have ever met. But what I found was, he had the perfect reason to go to the farm. He had to take care of the cows and do the hay and do all this stuff. So he would leave usually on Mondays and go to the farm, and he wouldn't come back until Friday or Saturday. And what I realized is that when ultra-stressed, what I wanted to do, and I'll say that is past tense because I've worked through that a lot, that still creeps up every now and then, but when ultra-stressed, what I want to do is leave. And realizing that that was what Dad did, and it was probably his way of being able to survive and get along with my mom when she would be more vicious. And so the power person is not always somebody that just screams and rants and raves, but they just do a behavior that is not based in love, and it took a while for me to actually see that in my dad.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
And we can have more than, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and when we do it, we call it something different usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where we call their behavior abuse, we say, I'm just taking care of myself or whatever. Yeah. But the other point to get is that with this power person dynamic, we can have several different persons who are power persons. Let's say in the arena of finances, it might be one person. In the arena of relationships, it might be another. In the arena of work life, it might be another. In the arena of body image, of self, might be still another person. the way that you can tell in any given circumstance where you're doing a behavior that you say, I really don't want to be doing this, the way you can tell who your power person is whose behavior are you doing? Look back and ask yourself, who did that behavior? And, you know, as Jeannie shared, that's what she started to understand. It was like a whole aha. I remember that one very well. When it was like, oh, it wasn't about mom. The power person was dad leaving. So what thoughts does that bring for you? It's 1:30. We've got a half an hour for conversation, and I would love to continue the conversation. Although I've got two interviews to do yet today, so if, oh, great, good. Thank you, Hello,
Susan.
Your hand up.
Yeah, it's 610. It's Susan. Hi.
Well,
hey,
you're
lady.
Right on the stuff. Hi, Michael. Thank you. I feel as if that was a personally addressed to me talk. And
oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah, right. So, and Jeannie, adding on, you just blew my mind. You've told that story about your dad before, more than once, and that's not a criticism because we need to hear stuff. But my dad was a power person. It's just your dad. He disappeared. He had a job from 6 in the morning to 6 at night, and he did not know what my mom was doing to us. He did not know. Now, I can't imagine he didn't know, but we didn't tell him, so he might not have known, but how could he have not known? Anyway, it's just he didn't want to deal with it. He wanted to keep the peace, but I've never thought of that as not acting lovingly. It's like a camouflage. You, because the escaping dad looks so gentle and so innocent. So even to put that person into that category of being a power person, it's a mind blower.
I think what was challenging for me too, when I, you know, first realized that dad was the power person, is because, you know, and mom just did, I'm sure, the best that she knew how to do. And when I think back of some of the stressors that she was under, you know, I have a lot more compassion than I used to. But when I was growing up, mom was the quote-unquote mean parent. Dad was the nice parent. And so for me to then put the category, so for me to put dad into the category of the power person felt like a betrayal of him, like I was betraying him, you know.
I understand totally.
And kids have to have, I think, one safe parent or relative or somebody that they feel, you know, this is the good guy, this is the safe space, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't too long ago when Michael and I were processing that what came up was, I can remember, and I probably wasn't 8, 9 years old, and I remember thinking, you know, if mom and dad would divorce, I would go live with dad and I would take care of him. And look what I'm doing right now. Mom's deceased, but I am taking care of dad. And it's like, whoa, I manifested that one. It may have been 50 years later, but.
Got to be careful what you ask for.
Yep.
Wow, you shouldn't probably ask for anything. Gee, that's amazing. That is quite something. Well,
I have some good news for you, Susan.
What?
Last night, and unfortunately I missed the call, I got a call from Jake. A call back. And I did try calling him this morning. I didn't see it till this morning. And I assume he was in school or wasn't up yet, but I did leave a message. So hopefully he'll return that call again and we'll get to have a conversation.
Oh, how I would love
that. He didn't leave
a
message, but I was pleasantly surprised to see the call on my phone that he'd called. So hopefully we'll be able to open a dialogue and he'll recognize there's some support. And, you know, chances are that some of the ideas will be a little easier to swallow for me as a third party than coming from Orb.
Oh, that's fantastic. I haven't heard from him today, and usually that's a good sign. But I know my relative, my cousin, whatever he is, who is the head of this program, is on to this now, and I feel as if a great relief about that, and that he just, Jacob, has some protection from himself, and that's, and my daughter called me this morning, and it's as if the whole thing had blown over. We did talk a little about Jake. She's unblocked him. She said he apologized in a very roundabout way, not the great apology that anybody would really hope for. But, of course, that's no guarantee because her husband did
good
that
start.
All the time. Yeah, it's a start. It's a good start. So thank you
Well,
for
and
doing
it may
that.
Be a power person dynamic for him. For Jake, and that's great that he can express his power person dynamic, and here you are, and here I am, and we can feed it back to him and support him in taking it to the next level. You know, I could
and
easily
not,
hear.
Not reacting.
Yeah,
not right. Yeah.
You know, I could easily hear him having a conversation with you where you say, well, I heard you apologize to your mom. And, you know, that was kind of a roundabout apology. And did you know that your dad used to do that? And,
oh,
you know,
no, yeah.
And we might want to work on making it a little more sincere, a little more direct, and, you know, help him to build the brain cells. I mean, how does a kid who came up under that kind of stress make it all up for themselves? It's not easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well,
but I was very delightful to get that call back from him.
Oh, I think it's amazing. I'm going to play dumb, though. Should I play dumb? I really need step-by-step instructions on how to navigate this. He does not know, for instance, that I called his director. He had asked me not to. A week ago,
right.
I said, should I call Dev? And he said, please don't. And I said, okay. Well, a week later, I thought, I'm going to call him, and I'm not going to tell you. And I don't think that's so good. But I did.
Well, I think as long as you're not engaging in a direct lie, I think as an adult that he's been turning to for some support, for you to make some decisions that might not be in harmony with his, I think is a reasonable thing, and I think is defensible. And it was done in integrity, and I think it's just awesome that it turns out that here he is in this program, and the fellow who's running the program, number one, has been in Al-Anon, and two, is a relative who's got an interest, you know, beyond just, you know, here's another kid at school. I think that's just an awesome, wonderful set of coincidences, and it's reasonable for you as the adult in this circumstance to make some choices that perhaps, you know, the child in the circumstance, and he is acting very much as a child, you know, does not agree with, and that's okay. You know, I don't have to follow the direction of everyone else in that circumstance. So,
well, I've been thinking about how I've been operating around Jacob when he's in his rage, and a couple of years ago, I would have said I'm walking on eggshells, but it's a little different because it's more informed. That's the only difference. I'm still very careful the way an eggshell walker would be careful, but the eggshell walker is afraid and mincing around, trying to find the narrow passageways in the maze of this mental illness. But the stuff you've been telling me leaves me feeling as if I'm standing on solid ground. I'm not walking much because I have to be still, but I'm really trying to find my way to him when he is not being loving, to remain loving. And usually that's just been aggravating to him. You know, he'll just fight back. And
well,
so
when love is present, you know, that other, that underlying unconscious energy is going to start to move. It does tend to create a healing crisis. So, you know, that's part of the process.
Oh boy, I'm just looking forward to some kind of motion breakthrough somewhere.
Mm.
And that's a goal.
I'm with you. Well, and it's reasonable to have goals. It's reasonable to have goals. They're good things to have. The time when you want to be canceling is when you recognize that if you put it in your mind, then your mind comes up with something that blocks or interferes with the flow of love through your structure. And that's when the goal is canceled. Otherwise, they're wonderful things to have. It's interesting that sometimes people will interpret the whole conversation about goals and canceling goals. Oh, does that mean I'm not supposed to have any goals, though? Then, no, not at all. I have all the goals you want. Just recognize that if you load one in your mind and you go into some form of hostility or fear, it's your healing opportunity. Like, you know, where in the culture have we ever been told anything that even resembles such a thing?
Yeah. When you say that the whole world is operating out of power person dynamics, I really think you're onto it.
The whole
world.
That's
how it feels.
I don't care whether you're looking at Putin. I can tell you, you know, we can look at the behavior of anyone when they're ultra stressed, and we can tell that person exactly what their power person did to them. It's as straightforward as night follows day, you know, day follows night. If you watch somebody ultra stressed and they, you know, twitch their hand on their head and their shoulder shakes and their foot taps and they rage, you can say to them, gee, how did it feel when, you know, your foot tapped and your shoulders and you rage? How did it feel when your power person did that to you? It's exactly, I mean, it's just like... And to me, to have the brain cells to recognize that and catch ourselves in those states and go, ah, so this is my next piece of work.
Yeah.
So here we are doing our next piece of work, all of us.
So I'm just going to, Deanie, back to you. I'm just going to have to think about my dad. Maybe I'll ask you a couple of questions in a while. My dad did the ultimate disappearance. He died he died young. He died at 70.
Hmm.
That young, it's an acceptable age. But he was sick starting when he was 60. He got heart disease, angina, and kept pushing himself and just killed over one day. Didn't want to do the hospital. Didn't want to take the meds. Didn't want to attract to himself.
So his life was about hiding out?
Yeah. And being just astounded at his kids. He did love us. And he was amazed. He'd stand in his pockets and say, gee, still, that's so amazing.
life, when we can get out of our power person time, when we get out of the crap and just watch life, it's just absolutely phenomenal. You know, it's like, wow, what a gift to have one of those and to be able to observe it throughout the world. The good, the bad, the ugly, doesn't matter. Just, you know, to be able to observe it and be part of it is just, to me, is the most amazing blessing.
Yeah. It is exhausting at times, though, Michael. I'm coming out of my depression and fatigue, but it took a few days. Just wasn't a happy time for a while.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. And, you know, when I recognize that that's the energy that's moving through me and I keep doing the things that keep love moving through me, that's when I can most quickly process through those energetic dynamics.
When you say process through, though, you're not necessarily saying even doing worksheets, are you? You're just breathing through it. You're just resting through it, allowing it to be. Or maybe
All of the above or none of the above. It can be just as simple as breathing and holding to active present love and allowing whatever needs to move to be embraced and moved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than
right.
even the slightest, you know, tightening of the neck, the closing of the breath, shutting down that flow of energy. It could be nothing more than just a slight raising of the head so that that tightness in the neck disappears. And I'm saying that because I'm doing that with my own structure right now and taking that breath and allowing that next layer of energy to come forward. It could be as simple as that. And if I do a whole string of those kinds of things, and remember our definition of processing is the ability to hold love, conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. I do a string of 10 times when I've done that sort of physical posture and locked down and held my breath and I breathe through it, and I've done the equivalent of a major piece of work.
I'd love to know more about that. That whole business you just said, locked down, doing what? I don't think I followed it.
Well, what I was sharing is, as I was observing myself in this conversation with us at this moment,
mm-hmm.
I noticed that as I went to respond to you, I tended to just a very slightly, like maybe an eighth of an inch to move my head down. And I just realized I was just lightly holding my breath, not a big kind of, but just lightly holding it. And so having observed that in myself, I just took that breath and raised my head a little bit and I could feel the shift in energy in my body, like an upward positive shift in energy. And that's what I'm talking about. It could be something as simple as that. And, yeah, it might be, you know, digging into the deepest worksheet or the deepest still point breathing session.
So
but it could be something as simple as that.
You became aware of a feeling then and undid the feeling without knowing where the feeling came from?
Exactly.
To start, and then you might go back. Okay.
Just allowed physiology to move. Recognized a slight, and it was real subtle, a subtle holding pattern in my own structure, and letting go of that holding pattern. Can be
so
as simple
you know
as that.
What did I say wrong?
Oh, no, you didn't say anything wrong. I just realized it was the energy moving in me in the discussion. But there's another one of those worksheets on it. It's my fault, your fault.
I've told you this.
You're
before,
innocent, dear heart.
Time.
You're innocent.
We all
You've
have,
always been innocent.
Tim and I were both asleep. He was having a dream, and I was having a dream. He turned over and whapped me on the back. I said, "Don't hit me, Mom." And he said something, "Mickey, cut it out." He was having a dream about his sister with whom he's had issues. And, I get flooded.
You were having the matching dream.
Yeah, we are matching bags of garbage. We woke up laughing about it because he actually said, "Tim, what did you say when in that dream? Remember that dream? You turned over and hit me, and I said, 'Quit hitting me, Mom.' And you said, 'Mickey, cut it out,' or something like that. But I don't know what she was doing to you." But we realized we're not alone in that bed. There are many people in the bed.
That's right. Well, that's straight out of the Healing Through Relationships workshop, matching bags of garbage.
Yep.
And in the awake state, the mind would go the next place of making it up. And, you know, out of the story of what happened with sister, one would tend to make up and project a story about husband. And husband out of, you know, who was hitting him would tend to make up story. And now two realities that are totally coming from the unconscious of each individual, and we each make it look like it's about the other person, and a whole other layer of complexity happens. And when
right.
we can start a new pattern of, oh, I've got some pained perception coming up here. I know how to collapse this and breathe
mm-hmm.
and move into love. It's like, whew, and let go of every, you know, sadness, every grief, every rage, every pain, every trauma, every, you know, depression, every anxiety can all just be let loose of.
Yeah. What in front of me? I'll put mute on.
I had someone show up on my Facebook page this morning mentioning someone who I've worked with for several years and have watched go through many layers of trauma and extreme trauma. And they mentioned how today was their birthday and that they were going to wish themselves, going to be the first ones with this post on Facebook to wish themselves a happy birthday. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. What a nice step. And that inspired me to write to them a few paragraphs, and it feels appropriate to share it. So what I responded to her with was, I support you proclaiming today, or proclaiming it, the year I take care of me, the year I eat well, sleep well, exercise, smile at myself and others each consistently, persistently do my inner work until all of my behaviors are loving, gentle, and respectful toward myself and others. I make this the year I study what it takes to do all of this and learn deeply and practice the causes of health. If failure to achieve any of these areas presents itself, I make the commitment to learn and work toward the practice of the necessary skills to heal in that area so that I create the best year yet of my eternal life. I then go uphill in that commitment so that each year that follows improves exponentially. And here's the vision.
And you put that up on Facebook? Woo!
I did.
Great.
And then I actually somewhat rewrote the commitment for that particular circumstance. And so then wrote, here's the complete vision for the achievement, and offered to join her in it, and that is my commitment. I promise to trust myself enough to tell myself the truth and be true to me and always engage in just and fair behavior with myself and others. I choose to claim my true nature by keeping the commitment to always be sweetness in my life and in the lives of every person I think about. And remember, that's the Aramaic definition of neighbor.
Yeah.
I will nurture myself and others daily and treat us lovingly, gently, and with respect in my thoughts, words, and actions for eternity. Mm-hmm. In every interaction, I commit to affection for both myself and others, to look for and acknowledge the highest and best in us as I surrender to love the true nature we share. I will use only voice tones that reflect my deep caring for us both. My connection to love, our source, gratitude for my life and relationship with all others, and our serenity, I will always make more important than any issue. I open my being to embrace myself and others in love. I open my being to be embraced in the love of others. If anything unlike love comes up in me, I will hold myself and us in my heart and listen as I learn to speak, experience, and be responsible, and forgive my own pained realities. I'm here for and with life. I promise to speak only truth as I keep communication open and keep love conscious, active, and present as we heal, celebrate life, and grow together. Happy Eternal Day.
That's quite a birthday card.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe we should go into the birthday card business.
Hey.
B, wouldn't that be nice to walk into a birthday card store and find that to hand to somebody? Hmm.
Yeah, well, Michael.
Another plate spinning.
What did you say?
I say another plate spinning. We'll put that in the hoppers and see what it will take to create that.
Speaking of plate spinning, I know it's coming to the end of the hour. Did you ever do anything with Elon Musk?
I have not. It's been in the back of my mind, and, you know, I did a little more research, and I'm not sure that
there'd
be the kind of opening that I originally imagined. I see some things that I just don't know where he's at.
Yeah, I've been seeing him too, and I wondered how you felt about that, because it's a little more complicated.
Yeah, if it were the initial thing that I saw from him, it would have been go forward. But then I'm not sure I was correct in my understanding of it at that point, or that I had a complete enough understanding to feel that it would be appropriate to move forward with that. So it's kind of in the back of my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael, good luck this afternoon. There's a lot going on.
Yes. Yes. Join us for the book club if you have the space, 3:30 Eastern time. And the link is in the notes today. We'll be joining Yinka in London. They're 8:30 their time. And so we're going to step into the first three chapters of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? So anybody wants to join us, jump on the notes. And we'll look forward to sharing that space with you and appreciate you deeply. Tell Tim I said hello.
Thanks.
All right. Blessings. Take care. So thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.